Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So tonight I want to speak a little bit about right speech, which is, you know, the first of the three areas of the second part of the training. I and Anabodhi yesterday and today spoke about the first training, which is in right understanding and in right intention, right thought. And the second training is the training in ethics or moral discipline. It's basically, you know, the way we live. So the way how we put this right understanding, right view and right thought, right intention, how we put that into practice in our lives. And you know, in a theistic context, morality gives a sense of obligation or obedience, you know, to a higher power or sense of constraint, whereas within the context of Buddhism, ethics is more seen as a means which leads to harmony and cooperation, and it's not, you know, not seen as an act of obedience, but rather a way, you know, how we can save energy, not waste our energy by creating a lot of obstacles, you know, within society or within our own minds. And so mainly it's about leading to harmony and reducing conflict within, you know, amongst people and in the family and in communities, but also like in our own minds, and in a cosmic sense it relates to the law of karma. So on all those three levels, starting, you know, within our own mind, radiating out in a community, and then in a cosmic sense it leads to harmony. And that harmony and a certain measure of peace, you know, they are a foundation for insight to occur. And in that sense, you know, it leads to the third training in what's called on this paper concentration, but I would rather speak about it in terms of, you know, stability of mind or focus of mind. And that, you know, enables for a deeper insight to occur, and then leads to an increasing of the first training to wisdom, which, you know, more clarity, more stronger right view and right intention. And then in that sense, you know, this training is like a spiral going deeper and deeper into the depths of reality. And it starts, you know, with abstaining from unwholesome speech, but then, you know, it's much more than that, because it's designed, you know, to actually break old habits, you know, of in an unskillful way, you know, ridding ourselves of unease. You know, I think you probably know how it feels, you know, if we feel if anger is aroused, it's so easy, you know, to have that idea, you know, if I would just let my anger out through saying something, I'd be relieved of that unpleasant feeling, you know. And then for a moment we even feel better, you know, just for a split second we might, or maybe a bit longer than that, we might feel, oh, a sense of relief, I've gotten rid of that energy, you know, which is like, you know, racing inside the body. And then you let it out and say something nasty, and then you, for a moment you feel and then afterwards, you know, you feel regret or remorse, and then it takes a lot of clearing up, you know, and it would have been so much better to not say this thing. But then it's too late, you know, and if that happens several times, you know, it can really have a very detrimental effect on a relationship and might take a very, very long time to repair, you know, to repair the trust. So it's a speech, you know, it has a very powerful effect, and also, you know, the written word, which is also connected with speech. So those, they belong together. And, you know, and in the section of Sila, there is these two channels, you know, of how we are acting out. It's through speaking and through doing something, or right speech and right action, and then also right livelihood. So those three are in that, belong to the area of Sila. And you know, it can't be said often enough that it's not just like an ethical training for the purpose, you know, of not doing something unskillful, but it's actually a training, a mind training, you know, by abstaining from saying something, you know, which is harming, you know, others. It's not only, you know, that we are not breaking a precept, but it's also, you know, that at the same time we are training our minds, we are turning our minds away, you know, from old ways of relating. And, you know, and that can be very difficult, especially with speech. We tend to speak a lot, usually, if we're not in retreat, so there's lots of opportunities, you know, to say something unwholesome. And you know, this the precept itself, you know, is actually only taking care of lying. It's if you translate the as the second precept is, no, it's not the second, it's the fourth precept. It speaks only about lying, but right speech has three more areas: divisive speech, abstaining from divisive speech, abstaining from harsh speech, and abstaining, you know, from idle chatter. You know, frittering time away by just kind of speaking just something in order to, you know, kind of fill the space. And the most basic aspect of a right speech is truthfulness. You know, refraining from speaking that which isn't true, and speaking the truth, you know, if one is asked, or if one is in a situation, you know, where that is the right thing to do. And, you know, I've read in a book, Bhikkhu Bodhi's book, says that, you know, when the Buddha was on his journey towards Buddhahood, when he was a bodhisattva, on that journey he has been breaking all the precepts, but he's always spoken the truth. And because of that, you know, he could continue his journey. Even he sometimes broke the precepts. And, you know, speaking the truth sounds kind of straightforward, but is not so easy, actually, if you look more into the details of it. Because you're also, you know, we can, you know, not speak the truth sometimes by exaggerating or by not saying something, yeah, by omitting to say something, or by just keeping silent, you know, being a quote-unquote innocent bystander, you know, if we are seeing something which is harmful, you know, and not saying something or turning away, it's in some way also, you know, breaking this precept. And so, you know, if we are becoming aware that we are doing this, then it's very important to investigate our motivation, you know, why are we not saying something, or why do we say something, what's behind it, you know, what is there, fear, jealousy, envy, you know, there are so many different motivations which can be behind non-truthful speech. And, you know, the main problem, you know, if we are, you know, it can, you know, start with a little non-truthful utterance, you know, and then, you have to say something else in order to shore that up, and then one more, and it just becomes very complicated, very complex. And if that happens a few times in a relationship, it can totally erode the trust, you know, in a relationship, and can be very difficult to rebuild. And there's a quote, you know, from the scripture, from the Anguttara Nikaya, where the Buddha speaks about, you know, this kind of right speech in terms of truthfulness. And he says, being at a meeting or amongst people or in the midst of his relatives or in a society or in the king's court and called upon and asked as witness to tell what she knows, she answers, if she knows nothing, I know nothing. And if she knows, she answers, I know. If she has seen nothing, she answers, I have seen nothing. And if she has seen, she answers, I have seen. Thus she never knowingly speaks a lie, either for the sake of her own advantage or for the sake of another person's advantage or for the sake of any advantage whatsoever. And then, you know, it goes on further, then, you know, speaking like this, then in the midst of any assembly, that person has a measure of confidence, you know, because she knows she has been speaking the truth. And then also, you know, to notice that if we have a strong, you know, desire or a strong idea in a certain area, that the mind tends to kind of put things together in a way which supports our ideas about something. And, you know, and then we tend to speak in this way also about the situation. So to really kind of notice, you know, what is going on, and then, you know, if we're waking up, you know, from such a illusion, you know, to just be really honest about it. And you know, behind speaking not truthful, if that is not coming, you know, from an intention to deceive, it is much less unwholesome in a karmic sense. But, you know, but if we are knowing that we are not speaking the truth because we have a certain desire, you know, in mind, then it's karmically much more heavy. And in the suttas, there's a sutta where the Buddha addresses his son Rahula when he is still quite young, and he explains to him, you know, the importance of speaking the truth. And he has a bowl with a little water in it, and then he says to his son, you know, somebody who is not afraid of speaking a deliberate lie makes very little spiritual progress, just as this little water in the bowl. And then he discards the water, and he says, you know, somebody who is not afraid of telling a lie is just discarding his spiritual progress by telling a lie. And then he uses that same pole and turns it upside down and says, one who tells a deliberate lie turns his spiritual progress upside down and becomes incapable of any progress. So, you know, telling a lie and knowing that one is telling a lie and doing that with intention is, you know, a real big obstacle on the path. You know, and even if that is done only, you know, in jest, only making a joke, because it just, you know, trains the mind in the wrong direction. And then the second aspect of right speech is refraining from divisive speech, refraining from, you know, slander or gossip or tale-bearing, and setting, you know, creating disharmony in relationships. And I've brought a quote for that as well. What he has heard, he does not repeat there so as to cause dissension there, and what he has heard there, he does not repeat here so as to cause dissension here. Thus he unites those who are divided, and those who are united he encourages. Concord gladdens him. He delights and rejoices in concord, and it is concord that he spreads by his words. So, you know, if we feel like a sense of, you know, having a wish, you know, to actually, you know, create this harmony amongst others, it's really very important, you know, to come back. What's the motivation? You know, is there, why do we want to do this? And really kind of hold that in awareness and not act on it, not speak on it. This is very important. And because, you know, you probably have noticed if we have conversations, a lot of the time we speak about others in conversation. What others have been saying, what others have been doing, it's a lot. Especially, you know, when we are like in small talk, you know, when we speak with others who, you know, at a meeting or something like this, or in a work situation, it's very easy, you know, to kind of get used to that and you know, looking at the magazines, looking at the media, there's a lot of that happening all the time. So it's very easy, you know, to get used to it and not have any sense of you know, just not being aware how harmful that can become in terms of, you know, training the mind in the wrong way. And it's really important, you know, to also, you know, look at the motivation, you know, what's the intention here, you know, what's the aim here? And also feeling, you know, that sometimes it can come from our own pain, you know, about our own situation, and just trying to kind of make ourselves feel better by speaking about others. And then the third one is refraining from harsh and abusive speech or angry speech. It's about the emotional tone when we are speaking. And, you know, the energy behind our words. You know, as I said before, we tend to have, you know, it's so easy to get rid of pain by just throwing it out. You know, in body language we can do that as well, and in speech in particular. Or like sarcasm, you know, the way we can say something which is actually literally quite nice, but the way how we are saying it, you know, conveys a very, can be a very painful message, you know, which we convey in that way. And it tends to close down, you know, communication. Closes the heart. And also, you know, mindful listening. You know, how difficult it is, you know, to keep an open mind if somebody addresses us in an angry way, you know, the heart just closes down. It's very difficult to hear what that person wants to say to us. And it's very difficult to keep an open mind when, you know, when we get that strong energy thrown at us. And, you know, if we can keep, you know, the mind open, if we can keep mindful, then, you know, it is possible, you know, to distinguish our reaction from what the person actually wants to say. And we can particularly observe that, you know, when when we deal with children, it's relatively easy, you know, they can throw a tantrum and we still, you know, keep an open mind. But if an adult is doing that, it's much more difficult. Because we feel threatened, you know, with a child it's much easier. But it's, you know, it's a good way to start. And then the fourth aspect is useless and frivolous speech. And in the Pali word for that is, says it all, is sampa-palapa. So this is exactly, and we in German we say plappern. It's actually quite similar to the Pali word. And, you know, refraining from useless talk, and also, you know, for example, the media, you know, the radio, TV, and all these kinds of machines, you know, producing sound. Sometimes, you know, when I go to visit friends or so, I notice that some people, they have on the radio or the TV the whole day, you know, in the background, and they don't really listen to what is being said. But if it wouldn't be turned on, they just feel like uneasy, you know. They have to have constantly some sound backdrop, and that's something, you know, which is really not very conducive for peaceful mind. And the, you know, small talk, sometimes it's a thing really necessary to do, you know, in order to make other people feel comfortable enough, you know, in certain social situations. But it's still kind of important, you know, to keep aware of why we are doing this, and not doing more than what's really necessary to, you know, make the situation okay. And even, you know, in the suttas, most suttas, you know, when the Buddha receives a visitor or somebody who comes to him, ask a question, there's always a certain, you know, amount of polite, courteous talk in the beginning, and then he cuts to the chase and speaks about the teaching. But in the beginning, he is doing a little bit of that to make the person feel at ease, you know, and that the person lends an ear. But he doesn't go on forever, you know, speaking like that. So a little bit is good. So basically, you know, it's. Through right speech, we are cultivating wholesome mind states like loving kindness and compassion and sympathetic joy. That's the mind states, you know, which we should emphasize in speaking in a way, you know, which helps us in training the mind towards, you know, a greater capacity to stay open, no matter, you know, what other people bring to us or other situations bring to us. And also, you know, truthful speech aligns us with truth, of course, you know, and with the way things really are. And even, you know, sometimes it might not be easy to speak the truth. And there's a quote in the Anguttara Nikaya where the Buddha speaks about the five factors of right speech. And he says, because possessing five factors, speech is well spoken, not badly spoken. It is blameless and beyond reproach by the wise. What five? It is spoken at the proper time. What is said is true. It is spoken gently, what is said is beneficial, and it is spoken with a mind of loving kindness. You know, and while I'm reading that, I'm very aware there's a very high bar, you know, to meet, and I'm not very good at that myself. But it just, you know, it's a very good guidelines to reflect upon. It's spoken at the proper time. That can be, you know, very difficult sometimes if we are like, if the emotions are aroused, you know, anger or fear, you know, then it's very hard, you know, to kind of hold back and wait. And what is said is true. It is spoken gently and is beneficial, you know, in terms of leading to harmony and cooperation amongst people. And it's said with a mind of loving kindness. So yeah, it's a very difficult area of the path, because we speak so much, you know, outside of retreat, and there are so many opportunities to get it wrong. And but you know, if we have a proper understanding of right view, what Ananda Bodhi was speaking about yesterday, you know, about the karma we make, you know, if we are speaking in a way which is creating disharmony and is creating, you know, is creating pain for others, then that can help us, you know, to master the energy to follow those five factors, you know, which I have just been mentioning. Because if we do that, we quite often have to hold back, and then that holding back, you know, creates unpleasant feeling. And you know, to be able to stay steady with that long enough, you know, until it settles, and then, you know, there's more steadiness and more clarity, and then speak from that, you know, which is much more effective. If it's not, you know, coming from that strong need of getting something or, you know, stopping something, but if it comes from a sense of openness, you know. And as I said before, you know, that's not because we don't want to break the precept, but that's also one reason. But mainly it is about, you know, interrupting unwholesome habits, you know, and turning the mind towards the unconditioned, you know, doing that in the service of liberating the mind from unskillful habits. And the precept is just a skillful means, you know, for that aim. That is because the Noble Eightfold Path is not about, you know, being a good boy or a good girl. The Noble Eightfold Path is about liberating the mind. And the precepts are just stepping stones for that purpose. So I think that's all I wanted to share today. If I speak little, I can't not make many mistakes. Okay.